in the neighborhood, right? And who's been at Experimental Intermediate, especially in the last like 20, 30 years, we've only been doing about 16 to 20 events a year. And she's been on our list of people to invite for a long time, but there was always people ahead of her. And here she is finally, and it's my great pleasure to present Nina Sobel. And I'm so excited to see her early work, which I don't know, I've only read about. So please welcome Nina. And I do want to point out that we do have a donation box in front, and we appreciate any donation you can give, which helps us continue our activities. And you can also donate online if you don't have any cash with you. You go to our landing page at www.experimentalintermedia.org, and there's a donate button there, so you can do that too. And enjoy the evening, and also buy our donation box. There's schedules for the rest of the December series, which there's still 5 more evenings left. So a wonderful screening tomorrow here by Zoe Beloff, and then several concerts next week. So enjoy, and here's Nina.
First, I'd like to thank Catherine Liberovskaya from Experimental Intermedia, because my work is definitely experimental and definitely intermedia, and the Emily Harvey Foundation for hosting me and for you all to be here this evening. Thank you. I'll be talking about several bodies of work. First, interactive sculpture and with brainwaves and window installations. I have done many window installations on the street to extend the gallery onto the street for passersby. And you remember Chrissy? There's a lot of people here who have participated in my setups. I'll go from foam rubber sculptures to brainwaves and window installations, followed by analog and digital and AI and a few miscellaneous pieces at the end. Okay, here we go. I started out by making foam rubber sculptures you could interact with in Rome in 1967, where I first met Barbara Mayfield and Mev, Music Electronica Viva, and I remember Richard Teitelbaum was experimenting with EEG, and I was impressed by that and curious about that, but couldn't really absorb it at the time, but it seeped in later. He was experimenting with EEG, and then I made other environments you could interact with. Here you can see the beginnings of the document, and then others that you can see here, and began interacting with them and began documenting that interaction in video in 1969. The cones, the rockable, the movable ceiling. The movable ceiling had a little squeegee, and 30 feet of cord that you could go to different rooms in the museum and vary the speed and the reverse. There were people who climbed up into the concave form, and they could reverse or variable speed, vary the speed.
Can you move a little bit that way? Because there's tall people hiding you in the audience. Okay, great. Because we can't see you at all.
Okay.
Perfect. Sure. Be better.
Should I move the mic over?
That's we do right. Want to see you in our documents.
Yeah, sure. It's a good idea. And I placed them anonymously, and I don't like to direct people in my installations. I like them to discover the work for itself and interact with it accordingly. I put the cones out, there were five cones, and people rolled around in them and they stacked them up, and the rockable, they either lay down comfortably, or maybe five or six or eight people would jump in and rock it back and forth and rock 180 degrees. And that's, let's go on now to the brainwave drawings. In 1972, my friend Mike Trivich and I were experimenting with an alpha wave neural feedback device, and I thought, why not create a video image that reflects the synchronicity of both of our brainwaves and superimpose that image over our faces so we can make an internal and external real-time portrait? And he said, why don't we use an oscilloscope? And one of us will be on the y-axis and the other person will be on the x-axis, and then that will make a lissajous pattern, which is a circular configuration. When you put two inputs on an oscilloscope at the same time, it bends the wave into a circle, bends the two waves into a circle and joins them together. And it all led me, my exploration of video's relation to the unconscious and thinking of myself as an electronic medium led me to conceive of brainwave drawings. And there is what I was just talking about, the lissajous. You can see my, you can't see my cursor. Ah, okay. Well, it's a good thing I know that. The center one at the top is that exact output. On the track yet. Thank you. here's the lissajous pattern. So that means that we're both putting out the exact same amplitude and frequency of brainwave at the same time, simultaneously. It was a miracle, and to be able to record that, and that's Brian, Ralph, Aka, Harriet Kipper of the Kipper Kids on the left, and myself on the right. And this is at the neuropsychology lab in Sepulveda Veterans, at the Sepulveda Veterans Administration Hospital in California, at Dr. Barry Sturman's neuropsychology lab. And he recorded it and through a PDP-12 computer, and it proved that one person could, in fact, influence the other person non-verbally. And there was a real skating that went on. One person would put out alpha, the other one would put out theta, the other one would put out alpha, then the person who was putting out theta would put out alpha, and so it went. And when you see the distortion vertically, or horizontally, that was depending on who was on which axis. And now I'm going to play, I'm going to play a little documentary. It's only 5 minutes long, but it's very intense. And here goes.
Nina Sobel has been intrigued by the idea of being able to capture the emittance of electrical impulses by the brain and transposing them into a graphic image since 1973. She began to collaborate with systems engineer Michael Trivich. On the monitor, two people were able to see their physical as well as mental image. They were able to create one composite brainwave drawing in real time. Sabel was determined to devise a non-competitive, creative environment geared to home TV viewers who could create an active rather than passive TV viewing experience and enhance their ability to communicate. Dr. Barry Sturman of the Sepulveda Veterans Administration Hospital in California offered access to equipment. As the director of the neuropsychology lab, he was most interested in the psychosociological aspects of the piece. Electrodes were attached to the occipital region of the brain, the visual cortex of two participants. They sat comfortably in front of a monitor which displayed their faces and the superimposed composite brainwave information. The real-time Lisa Zhu pattern changed in accordance with the brainwave activity. When both people put out the same brainwave, it formed an irregular circular configuration. Nonverbal communication between the participants was the objective. When one person was distracted, it appeared as distortion horizontally or vertically, depending upon the axis which displayed his or her brainwave pattern. The results were averaged through a PDP-10 computer and proved that two people could influence each other's mind states nonverbally. The EEG video telemetry environment was installed at the Contemporary Arts Museum in Houston, Texas. It was open to public participation. Electrodes were attached to participants in the same manner as in the Sepulveda installation, and an electroencephalogram was given to them. The public could view closed-circuit monitors of the people in the living room environment and the graph being made. A video projector also played back what others had previously created. Soon after getting a job at the computer store, Sabel began to collaborate with biocybernetics engineer Chris Matthews in using computer graphics to enhance brainwave drawing. With the support of Dick Heiser, experiments were made using his equipment and an EEG device from the Biofeedback Research Institute. During the following year, Matthews and Sabel developed computer graphics programs for the piece. By 1981, after experimenting with different patterns, their efforts were recorded in Matthews' laboratory. John Gord built a special effects generator, and other equipment was donated. It was discovered that when one participant made a transition from one brainwave state to another, it often influenced a similar transition in the other person, nonverbally. During the past phases, more emphasis was placed on the graphics. Now, attention was focused to achieve accuracy with the analog-to-digital device. The link between sophisticated EEG equipment and the Apple computer. After extensive testing, an environment was opened to the public at the Long Beach Museum of Art in the Artist and the Computer show. A computer program was created by Kong Lu, which resembled an electroencephalogram. Colors were keyed to each different mind state. The computer displayed an image showing previous brainwave activity, as well as the immediate responses. This allowed the participants to view their deeper previous states, as well as the current patterns, which were altered by the activity of looking at the screen.
Chicago who has archived and digitized most of my tapes, 257 so far. And it's a wonderful organization. It's gonna make me cry. I'm so grateful for them. And he put this together on the fly just recently. Media Burn, Chicago, Illinois. Great Tom Weinberg. Thank you very much. And without any further ado, I will play this for you.
What we have here is an electroencephalograph which picks signals up from the visual cortex of the brain on two channels for the two people working together. It goes to this box right here, which takes the information from the brain and digitizes it, producing a signal that the computer can understand. The information from the EEG goes up to the Conrad directly, which shows a direct output from the brain. The information also goes to the computer, which analyzes the brainwave signals for frequency and intensity, and creates a visual image on the screen.
What we are going to be working on now, as well as making the actual image the participants are making more sophisticated, we are also working on the idea of having one person in LA, let's say Anita is in LA here at the computer store working with this apple. In New York, Michael will be using another apple and an identical feedback system that is the identical electroamplification system, LA and New York, which the public will see via video phone, they will. And as well, we will be making a slow scan, hard copy, combined book of the actual images made between LA and New York. This communication and drawing will be broadcast via satellite. We hope to have this by the first of the year, 1980. So at that time, we'll make another tape that you will be seeing, hopefully via satellite.
Recently, I saw it many, many years ago when it was made, but I haven't seen it since, and it was a complete surprise, so I had to show it to you. Let's go on to another. In 1999, at Banff Center for the Arts, Park Bench, I'll go into Park Bench a little bit more later, but Park Bench, with Sonia Allen and Emily Hartzell, we went up and we made four seances, and a person in Banff and a person in New York were both connected to EEGs, and they were able to talk to each other, and the audience on the web and in present in the space at the John Phillips Gallery were responding to different meditations that were then read aloud. And in this one, the more people who came on, the larger the yellow globe glowed. We did four of them, and And if you'd like to see them, you can go to my website and look under Park Bench or Brainwave Drawings. And Park Bench's commitment to address physical disconnected of the information age by creating networked seances that connect physical and cyberspace via neural telepresence and meditation. And the medium is truly the medium in these seances, in which a web-based, artificially intelligent chatterbot leads the seance. And the website gives the audience a place on the web to join hands, keeps track of those present, and lets them know who else is there with them. It was really quite something. Then, in 2001, I worked with Anatole Shaw and Sun King to develop the first live streaming over the internet of brainwave information. I said a new genre of telepresence will begin to emerge. And that's how it was, they were all connected. All the equipment was connected. And then in 2010, after working for some years in developing a Brain Chat, which was an app that reached patent pending, functional patent pending, because it was an evolution in biocommunication interface technology, and Brain Chat networked two or more participants via computer or smartphone at separate physical locations by transmitting and interpreting brainwave patterns and other physiological factors of each participant. Like in BAMP, we had heartbeat as well, and electromyograph, muscle changes. And in this app, it is the same. The commercial application of Brain Chat utilized interactive brainwave visual analysis as a means to explore various aspects of human interaction. And that brings us up to what we're doing now. I'm collaborating with, I'm presently collaborating with a wonderful artist and engineer, Ed Baer. Transposing brainwaves into identifiable sounds and images. And I'm sorry I can't speak about it more because it's in the process of a patent. Thank you. sculpture. Social sculpture comes from Joseph Beuys, who, when he saw this installation, he was enthralled, and he invited me to come to Documenta 6 to talk about it, because he was excited about the idea of the window between the space, the gallery space, and the sidewalk disappearing and extending the gallery space into the street. And in this case, the meter maids came and, okay. Well, anyway, you can see the meter maids over there on the right. What I did was, I'll play this. And what is your name?
Alice.
Alice. Alice, can I speak to you?
Hang on. Alice, you want to do a word? I can't handle a word. Here she comes.
And that's the original list of equipment that was needed for the whole thing to work. And what I did was screen off the front of the gallery. So the only way that people could talk to me was through the mediated matrix of a monitor facing them with a split screen and a monitor facing me with a split screen. And then that was walled off from the rest of the gallery, and in the rear of the gallery was a plinth, and there's the meter maid and me talking, and a person could decide whether they wanted to participate or not. It's very important for me to teach people how to stop and start, rewind the equipment in the reel-to-reel setup at Sepulveda, as well as give options for participants. And there is, here is Genesis Piarich, who came and was observing and deciding whether to go out and participate. And he did. And there's Ann Bean, and Harry Kipper took these pictures. And there you get, I made the monitor smaller for the people who were facing on the street because of the glare. You can see the glare. I don't know where I'm at. Okay. Why isn't the cursor working? The pointer.
It says anything left. Use the cursor. You have to push it over this way. There you go.
Oh.
Later, you just drag it back this way. If you want it back to your screen, you just keep going, and it'll come back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. All right. Thanks. That's that. And then, I went up to Manchester from London, and I sat in the front window, and somebody on the street asked me if they could sit in the front window, and I said, sure, and I gave the whole piece over to the public. And the public began to take turns going inside where I was sitting. And at that time, there weren't any split-screen special effects generators in Manchester. So when you went into the gallery, there were two monitors side by side. And people could observe and come back out and decide that way. Yep. Moving right along, in and out the window. Chrissy Schlesinger, who's here, I think, there you are. And Joan Logue was in the first one, she's here too. And there's Chrissy. I set up for the situation where people interviewed each other, artists interviewed each other. And although I said, this isn't being recorded, it's not going anywhere, it's closed circuit, the presence of technology made the whole thing much more formal and made the people react to each other in a concentrated way, which I thought was interesting. And it exemplified the power, the presence of media. Oh, that's Sherry Shearer. Here's six moving cameras, and I'll play a tape for you.
This is an installation piece, Moving Cameras, Converging Views, which is installed in the window of the Franklin Furnace Gallery. It is here as part of a performance festival of Los Angeles and London performance artists meeting in New York and working together and independently. It was funded by the National Endowment for the Arts, the British Council on the Arts, and the New York State Council for the Arts. The piece was designed with me by John Gord, with the assistance of Paul Newell. And John designed and fabricated the special effects generator, which is enabling these cameras to move in sync with each other and present six separate images on the screen simultaneously, as well as these three split screen monitors remaining in sync with each other. The show was organized by Susan Lacey in LA and Susan Miller in London and went on for 2 weeks in March 1981. The cameras move in perfect sync with each other. They meet in the center. And if two people are walking from two directions on a sidewalk, their images would be converging. The bottom two images are for the people on the street immediately in front of the window. The two center images are two cameras which are panning automatically across the street on the tops of the cars and merging back in again. And the top two images, one camera on the left is going to the top of the building and back down to the ground. The other camera is moving up past the World Trade Towers up to the sky, and then will rotate back down to the ground. So you have sky, ground, ground, sky, moving in sync with each other. The center images with the flattening of the video camera. The effect the video has to flatten an image is to bring what is across the street to the same side of the street. I thought of the idea of LA and London coming together in New York, the merging, the converging of images, artists meeting together, working in New York. Bending the verticality, the physical space, the architecture, the gray, the black and white, I thought would be sufficient. Stunning black and white, the nature of the piece itself, it lends it something black and white very well. The image that you're looking at now, it was only seen inside the gallery. As you came into the gallery, that this monitor was set on a stand near the other cameras, so that it was bringing what was outside
in to the interior space, and you were presented with all six views of what a pedestrian sees at all moments inside into the interior space. It's meant to connect the spaces as one walks and one sees into one presentation.
I want you to say that Namjoon loved this piece, and he recommended it to the art director of Blade Runner at the time. And I was back in L.A., and I went to meet him, but there were personal problems I was having at the time, and I couldn't join in with the... it was impossible at the time. One of those things that you miss. Not to go back, but if there's time, I'll go back and explain more to do with this piece, Brain Chat. We'll move on. Of course, we're in the window now. And in 1992, passers-by and visitors to the Bronx River Art Gallery could experience brainwave drawings as part of a show curated by Amir Bey while I was an artist in residence there. And I did this piece in collaboration with Emily Hartzell. And these two participants were peering in at the window, through the window and passing by, and they asked if they could come in, and we welcomed them in, and they participated in the brainwave drawing. And the whole thing was very heartwarming. It went on for a couple of weeks. In 1994, we were invited to be artists in residence at NYU Center for Advanced Technology. And it was at this time when I first saw the telerobotic webcam. I asked people there, has anyone ever done a performance with this camera over the internet? And they said, no, we're just developing it now. And so I thought of doing a live performance, and so an early, very early interactive telerobotic webcam performative sculpture was born in collaboration with Emily Hartzell and international webcam participants. Web participants directed me to add clay to the armature by clicking on the monitor's image. And for example, when they clicked on the right, they directed the camera to move to the right of their screen. Monitoring that action, I added clay to the right-hand side of the armature. And as others clicked at different points around the perimeter of the sculpture, I continued to add clay to the armature, and thus a sculpture took form. That was that. And then I said, well, how about taking it to the streets? How about taking this camera out from the lab and putting on something that will be able to capture the outside world? And so I think it's one of the very earliest mobile webcams. And this is a park bench. I don't know whether I should go into. Let me come back to the park bench and go on to. Roz Diamond invited us to do an installation in at the Rico Maresca Gallery, and together with all the engineers and professors at the NYU Center for Advanced Technology, we put the webcam on Alice. We call the whole system Alice, and. And for passersby, they could touch the touch pads and direct Alice's eye to go into the gallery. There was a human chauffeur. I'll show you. Oh, God. Darn it. Oh no, it didn't play. It's not gonna play. It's not gonna play. Ah. And now, that won't play. Ah. Well, I'm sorry. But I was gonna show you Fern Neeson, may she rest in peace, riding around inside the gallery and showing you the movement of the camera, of Alice's eye moving around the camera as she watched there's a small monitor on the handlebars. And she was watching the small monitor on the handlebars as to where the people on the web or the passersby were directing Alice's eye to go to see the show inside the gallery. The people on the passersby had a camera sewn in the Queen of Hearts card at the top. There was a small surveillance camera capturing their image, and their image was superimposed on the monitor inside the center of the touchpads, which put them inside the gallery, inside the show. And there was a monitor on the far right there that had a split screen that showed the inside of the gallery and the outside. So you had internal and external and a webterior, interior, exterior, and webterior. And people on the web were also, as I say, controlling Alice's eye. And I'm sorry it didn't play, but life goes on. Just try it once more. Now, no, okay. Well, then 2 years later, we made her more sturdy. We went to the Computer Human Interface Conference in Atlanta, Georgia, and we put her on a steady tripod because there was a torque in the pole, and this is how she looked, and inside were people operating the camera, telling people who got on the Alice where to go. And then the almost last window piece was in 2007 in Vienna. Over a 2 month period of time, I didn't put all the sculptures on here, but over a 2 month period of time, I was inside this gallery. I had a front window, and I made the sculptures, and people were invited in and could watch me make the sculptures. And draw, as I turned the sculpture, I drew, and I turned the sculpture, and I drew, and I turned the sculpture, and I drew, and I made this large drawing you see behind me. That's one of them. And then somebody who loved everything bought the whole show and made them into bronze. And these are the bronze representations, bronze sculptures. Okay, and then coming back, I did this installation as part of the Apocalypse show in Brooklyn, curated by Johnny Velarde. And that's bringing us into sculpture. The piece on the left I made in 1965. I was 18, and my history teacher bought it from the student show, and he still has it in the same place next to his fireplace, and he sent me this picture of it. His name is Peter Rutkoff. And on the right, there it's a couple, and it's in porcelain, and notice there's no face, because there's another drawing that came about also with no face. And these are made, they've been made into bronze by R.J. Fleck up in Toronto. And here's more of them. They're in bronze. And these are my inner warriors, energy flowers, from 2008 to 2011, made out of clay. And I wasn't going to include that because they're so personal, but I did. And here is a family of wax figures with drawings that went, lots of drawings that went along with them. And here's that old faceless sculpture with a drawing made out of it, but don't ask me why. Lately I've been doing what I call essence of drawings, immediacy of drawings, the need to draw. When you have the need to draw, and you draw, you just draw from the mind to the paper, and the urgency thereof, that's what these are, of relationship problems and autobiographical and whatever. And here, I started getting into digital aspects, and I was interested in the flow of immediate drawing over movement, and did these over a skater, an ice skater that I knew, and here is a favorite piece of somebody in the audience, Anne McCoy. And I'm going to play Unseen, Unheard, which was done in 2020 because of the unseen and unheard viruses that were encroaching upon us. And there's a retrospective on nomada.net. If you go to nomada.net and look up Hindsight 2020, there's masses and masses of digital images, moving stills, whatever, and he's still hosting it. So this is
So without further ado, I play you Unseen, Unheard.
Thank you.
22-page folio based on the video, and made custom boxes for it, and Aurea Harvey was the first one to buy one, and I'm very happy about that. That's that. Now, I would just play, it's only 3 minutes. Words and also about the This was made with the prompt, humans evolving into animals. And I'll only show a couple of things. I've been working on it for some time now. It's AI. Stable diffusion. Right brain, left brain, investigation is the creative process. It's a video. I'm not going to show the video, but I had a block of clay and a camera on that, and the camera on the model, and superimposed them. And I forced myself to talk, and kept forcing myself to talk until I had to concentrate on the details. And once I concentrated on the details, I could no longer speak. And that was my investigation of the creative process. And now, I can't resist playing this one. It's only a couple of minutes.
at Cornell.
Do they have like a metal shop or something?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh. What were the cones made of?
No, cones were wood. They were 2x4s, and I cut the arcs out, overlapping arcs, for the 5-foot diameter and the 2-foot diameter of the apex. Decided. Thank you. Thank you.
What was the one that you made that created music? Created music out of the connection of I lost track of what the brain was, but there was music and it all sounded like there was a voice in the back.
I can't talk too much. That's my last one. But I can't talk too much about it. I'm sorry.
I was just wondering, can you talk about where did the music come from? What you needed?
I'm sorry. I was just told very recently that it'll be off the charts.
We'll find out.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's going to be a provisional patent, so it'll hopefully be like February, and then I'll be able to, you know, be able to tell you. Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
So.
Yes. Kristen always reminds me to tell people that I only use the cell phone. I only use the cell phone. And it was a cell phone. It was an iPhone 8.
Wow.
And iPhone 8, you could, like, push all the glitches you wanted, and things would be revealed to me. Those images were revealed to me. I didn't create them. The camera created them. I mean, I pushed the contrast. I pushed the lightness. I pushed the brightness. I pushed the darkness. They were magically appearing to me. And now you can't. You can't do that with the. It's all automated to such a degree. There's no creativity allowed anymore with them. Yeah.
You started to talk about park benches. If you go back a little bit, I'm sorry.
Oh.
You wanted to make sure.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Park bench made over 85 performances. Live performances every Monday night. In fact, Adrian Wartzel, who's here, participated in making one. And they're available on my website if you go to Park Bench. And all of the participants' names are listed, and the performances that they did. And if you just click on them, it will go to the grid as to where they are. What made it Park Bench was a safe place to sit in cyberspace. We first approached the Center for Advanced Technology to create a means between Crown Heights and Manhattan to use media to have conversations going through teleconferencing, and so people could throw rocks at the screens instead of at each other. And we looked into different teleconferencing systems, and just about when that happened, the internet became available, and then
I approached the lab about the telerobotic camera. But then we need a whole interface, which I haven't put up, which I should have, to encourage that communication. And I worked out a system with the DOE to hire youth after school to man the subways, so to teach people as they were coming off or going on the subway how to do email, and as a way to teach the public who don't have any time other than going to or from work how to become a part of this new growing trend of email. And the rest is history. Yeah. I could tell a lot about more about marketing.
Yeah.